So what I originally planned to talk about was attempts to derive probabilities within something like the Everett interpretation, deriving probabilities from the structure of the wave function, and why I'm not so happy with them. But I decided I'd rather actually talk about what I think the wave function and the quantum state actually are, to the extent to which I have a coherent view, and not so much what I think they aren't. But I can just say a brief word about why I'm not so enamored of these attempts. Basically, I think that they tend to, when these derivations work, they exploit bits of structure in the apparatus of wave functions, tensor products representing different systems, and so forth, the unitary evolution and the inner product, that are there in order to represent our probabilities. They're in order to represent probabilities for experimental outcomes that we've arrived at via a process of repeated experiment and, you know, something like Bayesian inference to the best theory. But even in the context of a single experiment, maybe at a very phenomenological level, and the wave function turns out to be a good representation of these things, or the density matrix. And so it's not all that surprising that given enough assumptions about how you want to derive probabilities from this structure, and you want them to have some kind of nice relationship to the structure, if you make enough assumptions like that, you can get back to the probabilities they were designed to represent. But I would argue that taking this object as therefore physically real is the kind of reification that we probably shouldn't be doing. Now I'd like to talk a little bit more about what I think is going on. So it's sort of unproblematic that we can use states to calculate probabilities. And I've argued that I would like to think of states, density matrices, as a, as I said, a compact, efficient representation of the probabilities for, say, sequences of preparations followed by measurements. You know, or maybe other processes that we want to think of as actually having outcomes. And you know, we have some views on the probability of those outcomes. And in fact, quantum mechanics is recommending strongly to us that we adopt certain views in particular cases. So maybe there's a nagging issue of systems we can't ever experiment on or won't experiment on, and we have to think carefully about you know, extrapolating to those systems via thought experiments or something. But it's an idealized idea. Now, a few asides. Okay, did quantum states actually arise this way? Well, you know, maybe to some extent there were probabilistic phenomena that were underlying, you know, expectation values that people were effectively observing in large ensembles. But it was really these large ensemble phenomena and also things like energy spectra that were being explained initially. And I think that's come up several times before in this conference, but an important thing that we need to take on board, I think, in our thinking about what the quantum state is. Can I ask you to raise your hands at 10 minutes as well as 5? 10 and 5? Okay, second of all, what do I mean when I say that we've got these probabilities? I'm perfectly happy to drink the Bayesian Kool-Aid or the Jeffreysian Kool-Aid and view probabilities that occur in empirical theories or other empirical contexts, like going to the track, as guides to action that determine betting odds. And so I'm also perfectly happy to think of, as Chris was saying the other day, aspects of quantum physics is basically empirical additions to Bayesian coherence of two types. And one is sort of a mathy type, and the other I might call more meteor, more physics-y type, perhaps. So the mathy type is that if you just think abstractly about what is the structure of a theory where you can do different things to a system, and when you do something, there are various outcomes that are ways the system could respond. And you've estimated or inferred in your Bayesian way, taking some Bayesian rational reconstruction of what scientists actually do when they estimate probabilities. You've estimated these probabilities. A theory of this type that gives these probabilities could have you know, a huge variety of possible structures. And I actually spend a lot of time studying these possible structures as represented by, you know, convex sets of states and then linear functionals on those states that represent, when you evaluate them, they give you probabilities of measurement outcomes. And it's a lot of fun. The mathematics is very beautiful. You can look at information processing in those theories and try to use axioms about information processing to characterize Hilbert space, and that's a lot of what I'm going to be doing this year at PI. But to some extent in this talk, I'm going to be arguing that we need to supplement that and maybe even move away from that attitude to really get an idea of what quantum probability is. It'll be nice to understand what you know, what quantum states are in terms of the information processing power they give us, what they can't give us, but I think we need this other meaty stuff. So the mathy stuff is getting from this general idea, which is basically just probability theory applied to situations where you can do alternative things, to the specific structure of Hilbert space, you know, the density matrix, and the POVM elements, the effects between 0 and 1. But we need something meatier. We need the quantum physics that adds forces, particles, fields, orthonormal bases with physically significant labels like energies, interaction Hamiltonians, and things like that. And the math that gets between them involves observables with, you know, significant labels on their eigenbases, symmetries, maybe preferred tensor factorizations like we were just hearing we should be careful about. And you know, specific structure of interaction Hamiltonians. My work on foundations hasn't involved these much, but I think they're going to be crucial to really understanding what's going on. Okay. So what if we commit ourselves to no more than this view of quantum states as probabilities? And I think, you know, I've learned this week that it may be fairly close, actually, to this Ithaca interpretation, actually, correlations without correlation. So is the quantum state perfectly analogous to a probability distribution? Do we not need to think of it as a fundamental physical entity or as real? Is it a property of the system whose state it is? Is it localized at that system? So I'm tending to want to answer no to most of these questions. It may be a fundamental part of physical theory, but not necessarily an entity that we conceive of as real. So, you know, this may sound quite similar to the cubist approach of Fuchs and Schock. And, you know, I went to the same grad school as Chris with Rüdiger there as a postdoc, and we hung out a lot, so it's not surprising that I absorbed a lot of their ideas. You know, I was going to say that I even provided some of the Kool-Aid, but it was not that kind of Kool-Aid. But yeah, the radical subjectivist Kool-Aid got you guys off of Jane's. Okay, but here's where I may differ. Are quantum states subjective? Well, in the sense of personalist Bayesian judgments, I'm willing to say yes. But I also think it's, to some extent, it's a personalist Bayesian judgment that the sun is going to rise tomorrow. And I think that's also an objective fact. As objective as they get, anyway. I haven't had that much Kool-Aid. In the sense in which the fact that the sun will rise tomorrow is an objective fact of physical and astronomical science, I'd also, and other general human knowledge, I'd grant objectivity to some quantum probabilities in some situations. And so I'm not sure about the extent to which this is a real difference from Fuchs and Schock or not. And I'm too smart to even attempt to say whether it differs from Carl. I haven't actually talked to him about this topic as much. So. Okay, so I want to claim that, and maybe this can, you know, serve as a springboard for discussion. What's the time? Cool. Thanks. So if you send a well-heralded photon, so you know when it came out, through when it's going in, through a polarizing beam splitter, and you do high-efficiency photodetection at one output, and again, you know when it's supposed to get there. So if there's no count, quantum physics plus general background knowledge determines the probabilities of counts at the outputs of a second photodetector. And sorry, what I meant to say was, if you place another polarizer in front of the another polarizing beam splitter in front of the other output where you didn't count, and then you count after its outputs, so you're measuring the polarization of the other output in some basis, I would argue that quantum physics plus general background knowledge determines the probabilities of the counts you're going to get as a pretty objective fact. And I don't think it's right to argue against this because of quantum analysis, the apparatus is needed. I don't think you need a full quantum analysis of something to tell us that it's a polarizing beam splitter. I mean, you know, it's this chunk of calcite maybe, and somebody's machined it, and they've shown some lights through it, and saw where the spots went, with, you know, with polarizers in front, and they marked on the polarization, the birefringence axis, et cetera. So, you know, there are physics concepts getting into that analysis. It's true. It's more theory-laden than just your everyday statements. But I don't think it necessarily depends on a full quantum analysis of the beam splitter. So it's sort of like, you know, just as we don't need neuroscience to trust in our perceptions, it's sort of like that, except that it's a bit more theory-laden. But, you know, we can do statistics starting from an exchangeable prior for repeated use of the beam splitter, and that prior is not necessarily based on quantum theory, and that's another way in which we can get confidence that that's what this thing actually is, you know, besides the catalog that came out of it and stuff. Okay, now I know that that is probably very controversial, but I just want to see if we can run with that. So does that mean that, you know, these things are elements of reality? I don't think so. And, you know, it's part of the, for instance, the EPR argument was that, well, at least if we can know that a measurement outcome will give probability one, if we were to make that measurement, then there's an element of reality corresponding to the fact that that measurement outcome would have probability one if we made that measurement. And I think I'm going to say, I don't think that, you know, those probabilities may be objective, that may be a fact, without there necessarily being an element of reality that is that fact. I mean, it's the measurement results, or maybe some other variables, and the settings of things that are the facts, and these have to do with correlations between them. Sorry, that are the elements of reality, and these have to do with the correlations between them. So quantum theory is recommending or insisting on certain constraints in decision-making, at least in some situations, in which an agent knows that you know, certain measurements may be performed, and also has particular background knowledge, you know, expressed in terms of this sort of macro world of events. So maybe the quantum state is somewhat law-like in that sense, but not necessarily an entity. Okay, should EPR bother us? Well, instantaneous change of a state of knowledge needn't bother us. Instantaneous communication perhaps would, but this doesn't permit it. So I'm not so so worried about collapse of this kind of thing, even though I'm willing to say it's objective. Now, the fact about how Alice should bet on the outcome of Bob's measurement, I'm going to argue, is not a fact about how things are at Bob's site. It's maybe a fact about how things will turn out if he does some particular thing. But it's not a fact about how things are at the time. For instance, it's not reasonable to say that quantum theory recommends that Bob should immediately change his betting behavior to the one that it's recommending for Alice. So there's some agent relativity here. You know, the quantum state is still for particular types of agents with respect to a particular type of system that they're dealing with. It's about how you should act if you should know certain things, and the states are for agents in this version too. Instrumentalism, I'm not sure how important this is, but so we may be undecided about whether to take these probabilities as real, thanks, or we may want to not take them as real, but they're certainly useful instruments. And I'd like to say that it can be an objective fact which instrument is useful in a given situation. You know, perhaps even if that instrument isn't an entity, but it's some formalism that we're using to calculate, or a rule for behavior, which is really what quantum state is in this sense, if we're serious about the Bayesian attitude. But then there's a nagging worry. Maybe more facts than we think about reality are this nature, and maybe they're enough so that we'll want to call psi real after all. So if I say that's a table in front of me, you know, is that really all that different from saying, well, reality is such that I'm well advised to use the concept of table with all the predictive, it will support things, and retrodictive, somebody made it, baggage that it brings along. You know, how much difference is there? Words are tools, and we're stating facts using words, so maybe we're just using a tool even when we talk about ordinary things. So I guess I'm just trying to make a devil's advocate case for maybe why I might be committing myself to a little more reality for the state that I'd like. I don't know, can counterfactuals help get us out of this? Does the counterfactual nature of perfectly predictable measurement outcomes, statements about measurement outcomes, does that help save the quantum state from being real or us from wanting to say it's real? And again, many of our concepts about ordinary things that we think describe properties they really have are dispositional, and they involve what's going to happen if you do, if you do this thing versus that thing, the two things are incompatible. And I don't know, maybe that's something deep, actually, about our notions of reality, that they always involve some openness to doing alternative things to or with the entity. So in a phrase I always like to find, Ian Hacking, which is about entity realism, so, well, it's not a necessary condition, of course, but if you can spray them, they're real. So you do things with things. Okay, I think I've made it clear that, yeah, even though objective, these states are agent relative. What if you do decide to take rho? Well, that was an interesting typo. I meant not to have the cat around that thing. So what if you do decide to take the quantum state, well, rho or psi, actually, as a non-localized but real entity? You still don't wind up with an Everettian theory, because you take measurement results and settings and perhaps other macroscopic events as real beables. But it's not Bohmian. You don't have deterministic dynamics for these beables. Maybe it's closer to objective collapse, right? Because taking outcomes at real, at some point, it's probably going to limit the scope of the superposition principle. And I just had a little note here. I thought it was ironic that Bell advocated choosing position as a beable on the grounds that all measurements are ultimately measurements of position. And I'm remembering this, so if I'm mistaken, someone should call me out. Isn't this basing a fundamental theoretical choice on a vague notion, which is exactly his objection to, other measurement-based formulations of quantum theory? And in fact, don't our eyes measure photons' momentum? And is the position beable really measured in the de Broglie-Bohm theory anyway? Okay, so, I think you could take this objective probabilities approach and in some situations at least have a wave function that you think of as not localized but real, and you still don't quite get Bohm or Everett. A few crucial issues for such a view. Are we really happy with measurement outcomes or some vaguely described, macroscopic events as beables? I mean, I'm kind of with Bell in thinking that, this is pretty vague and ill-defined. I'd like to get a better handle on it. That, I think, is really one of the crucial, crucial things one needs to do if one takes this point of view. Now, closely related is, what sorts of things can count as agents and what as systems, if we talk about states being four agents with respect to a system. It's a bit too much of an unanalyzed primitive for my taste. And there is, this idea that you can sort of take anything as a quantum state when you're thinking about doing experiments on it, I'm not quite satisfied with. For one thing, I'm worried about compatibility issues between, the idea that measurement outcomes are a primitive notion and such an analysis. If Bob knows Alice has done a measurement, her should refer to Bob. I want Bob to describe Alice as having a definite but unknown outcome. So in what kinds of situations is a given system or aspect of a system, maybe it's just a subalgebra of some algebra observables with some superselection rules, and in what kinds of situations is a given system quantum for a particular agent? I mean, do both agent and systems have to be small parts of the world? I kind of like that idea. You know, maybe they need some other stuff around to use as a reference frame. And so you never get quantum mechanics for the whole world, because, I think one point of view is you can't do experiments on the whole world. Parts of it do experiments on other parts, and they probably maybe have to use other parts, still other parts, as reference frames. So I think it's really important to work out this, to explore the relational attitude toward the quantum states. And maybe that can give us a coordinated, consistent picture of what the different perspectives are and how they fit together. Okay. Not all measurement and states are created equal. I think we need to think carefully about this. You know, the special status of position and momentum in spatial quantum mechanics, and as Terry mentioned, the relation, the relation to classicality via canonical quantization. That is something that we need to take into account beyond just Hilbert space and finite dimensions and arbitrary unitary transformations. Speaking of arbitrary unitary transformations, it actually took quantum computation to really give us an idea of how we might do arbitrary unitaries, arbitrary measurements, or prepare arbitrary states on, I said 2 qubits, I meant large numbers of qubits. I didn't mean 2 qubits. And also to drive home the point that most of them cannot be done, because the circuits are just too huge. So most quantum states cannot be prepared. What does this mean for our operationalist model, where we just say, I write down this beautiful Hilbert space, and I can do all measurements, and I can prepare all states, and look, it's this ordered linear space, and it's dual, and it's self-dual. It's so nice. But in terms of real operational things, there's huge asymmetries between some of these measurements and others. And I think that's probably very significant for the foundations of what this Hilbert structure, space structure means. Okay. I just want to say a little bit about Everett, and then I think I'll close. So how is a macroscopic superposition state different from a dinosaur? I mean, I've argued at times, even when I'm playing devil's advocate for Everett, that, macroscopic superpositions aren't that different from dinosaurs, and I think David Wallace has too. We can't observe them, but we think they exist because of indirect evidence, blah, blah, blah. How is the state? Me seeing a click in the top counter in some setup, or the left counter maybe, depending how it's oriented. On the other hand, a particular photon beam at a particular time being vertically polarized, and some state of the rest of the universe, which is correlated with this. And on the other hand, me seeing a click in the bottom counter, and a horizontally polarized, and some rather different state of the rest of the universe, which is associated with that. Why might we think this exists, which is what the many worlds interpretation claims is going on in a measurement? Why might we be entitled to say this doesn't exist, even though we do believe in other unobservable, not directly observable entities like dinosaurs? This is the kind of argument that Deutsch is making in the first part of his book, The Fabric of Reality, when he discusses many worlds. He's like, we see the shadows. But the funny thing is, we do not see the shadows of these things, right? The shadows are the interference pattern. Nobody has done that interference experiment. We have no idea whether it could be done. And just thinking about the complexity of doing it is mind-boggling. But it might be worth seriously thinking about what that would involve. On the other hand, we have dinosaur footprints, right? So this is a drastically new regime that many worlds wants to extend things to. And it's commonplace for physical theories to not be quite accurate when you push them into new regimes. This is where interesting new physics starts showing up. So I think it's actually an important thing to think about is, you know, what kinds of regimes, are there principled reasons for expecting that we could never observe such quantum superpositions that they represent, you know, experiments we'll never be able to do and that we just sort of mod out of our actual theory of what these correlations are, whether you think the correlations are real or, you know, entities or just sort of law-like betting advice. So I think I will end with that. I just want to say that I think this field is a really exciting one because, you know, we're in a situation where I think there are real issues for physics that are raised by the wave function. What the hell is it? You can see that, you know, cosmologists are grappling with the same issues at their conferences. I encourage people to interact with them, figure out, you know, they some of them use wave function of the universe. Some of them talk about quantum coherence, well, you know, fluctuations in the CMB that originate in quantum fluctuations. You know, should that shake our dislike in the Everett interpretation if we believe in it? I think there are serious physics issues about, you know, what can and can't be observed in the way of interference. What really is quantum? What can we treat as quantum? And there might be some real progress to be made if we interact with the rest of physics more.
Okay. Thank the speaker.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
So a few minutes for questions.
Just a comment. It was funny that your reaction to quantum computation was how hard it would be to make most states. I had exactly the opposite reaction. I was astonished at how easy it was in the context of quantum computation, partly, of course, because it's still a Gedanken field, to make unbelievably difficult states like you know, n particle GHC states with nothing but a Hadamard gate and a few C naughts. So I, you know, not to mention these extraordinary error correction code words, the beautiful simplicity of the gates that give rise to them. So I you know, it's an aesthetic remark.
So I agree with that. And I think I was trying to make both points, which is that until quantum computation came along, we had much less idea of how to make interesting and complicated states. But if you just think about what's out there in Hilbert space, it's still true that most of it is not very accessible. But yeah, the stuff you can get to is wild and weird enough that, you know, even if that other stuff is really not relevant to physics, you can still do amazing things with quantum computation.
Can you pull up the Wittgensteinian?
Wittgensteinian
style quote.
I shouldn't have said it was for dummies. I should have said it was by dummies.
By dummies. That's a table in front of me versus reality is such that I'm well advised to use the concept of table with all the predictive and retrodictive baggage it brings along in dealing with this particular situation. Not much difference is there. So I like that. I like that very much because we at least have the same two termini, quantum states and tables. But I've been inclined to think, well, it seems to me that you're inclined to think that perhaps quantum states are more like tables than we might have previously thought. And the lesson I've taken from it is that perhaps tables are more like quantum states in the quantum Bayesian way than we had previously thought.
I know, but I guess, so I was an undergraduate in philosophy at a school that was highly influenced by people like Quine and Goodman. So I sort of came out of there already inclined to be pretty Bayesian, I guess you might say, about tables, or I mean, to not to, you know, not to be too simplistic about what you know, what it means to say something like "there's a table," but I mean, so we were talking at lunch the other day, and I think Rüdiger said something about you know, a bundle of expectations. So to say this is a wine glass is, not that we were having wine at lunch, is a bundle of expectations, and I like that because I sort of like this view that it's Bayesian probabilities all the way down in some unarticulated way that's maybe hardwired into the nervous system, and that, you know, retrodiction and prediction in some fuzzy probabilistic sense are a crucial part of everything we do, or most of what we do. So maybe I was sort of already taking that view, but actually this slide was somewhat intended as a, or this business was, these last two chunks were intended as a little bit of a devil's advocate, devil's advocacy against the position that I would sort of prefer to take, which is that the quantum state's not real. So.
Okay.
Thanks.
So we have a choice. We've about 12 minutes or 30 minutes passed, so we're delayed. Do we want to start in at half past now, or do we want to have full half hour? Full half hour? Okay.